documentary on News Talk.
Now on documentary and drama on News Talk, producer John Higgins tells the story of how a group of young Irish people designed, built and sent Ireland's first spacecraft into orbit around the Earth in AirSat 1, Ireland's first satellite.
On the 21st of August, 2024, a tiny spacecraft circles our planet at incredible speed, 27,000 kilometres per hour. Its orbit taking it around the Earth every 95 minutes. This is Ireland's first spacecraft, AirSat 1, the educational Irish research satellite. Light travels through space at almost 300,000 kilometres per second. Imagine how far it can travel in a year and you have a light year. Now imagine a galaxy far across the universe, billions of light years away. A massive star collapses in upon itself and dies, creating one of the most violent explosions ever observed in the universe, a supernova. This catastrophic event sends a blast of gamma-ray photons racing across the universe with such power that billions of years later, they reach our solar system. This is the moment AirSat 1 has been waiting for. And with conditions just right, its gamma-ray detector, known as GMOD, sets to work for the first time.
My name is David Murphy. I'm the systems engineer for AirSat 1, and I'm also the lead scientist in charge of the GMOD payload. So we're here in Mission Control. So you've got this big bench with some computers that the operators use to interact with AirSat 1. And then up on the roof, we have Yagi antennas, which are sort of weird, long-looking antennas that you actually point in the direction of the satellite. And they can follow, they move, and they follow the satellite as it passes over each day and each night. On the 21st of August, GMOD detected its first gamma ray burst, and then 80 minutes later, it detected its second gamma ray burst. So the first gamma ray burst that AirSat 1 detected was a long gamma ray burst, and those are associated with the deaths of massive stars. So when these really big stars reach the end of their life, they die in a process that can produce a gamma ray burst. So the second GRB that AirSat 1 detected is what we call a short GRB. This GRB is likely to be the merger of two neutron stars that were orbiting each other for a very, very long time and started to spiral into each other. So somewhere between 2.8 billion years ago and 5 billion years ago, these two neutron stars merged together, producing this gamma ray burst. This gamma ray radiation traveled throughout the universe for up to 5 billion years, before some of the photons from that ended up inside AirSat 1, inside the GMOD detector, and we were able to pick up a signal from that. We realized that we had detected these two gamma ray bursts quite late on a Wednesday night, and then all day Thursday, everyone was just crowded around this one table, and that was just incredibly exciting to be able to actually have a scientific result that you could go to the international gamma ray community with and say, hey, We saw this thing, here's what we saw, this is now, you know, this is part of the ongoing story about these objects and the study of these objects.
By September 2024, AirSat 1 had completed more than 4,400 successful orbits of the Earth, passing over Ireland six times a day. But to tell the remarkable story of how this tiny satellite got into space, we need to go right back to where it all began. I joined endorsing professor for the project, Lorraine Hanlon, on campus at University College Dublin.
It started with my PhD student, David Murphy, and myself deciding in March 2017 to submit a proposal to ESA, who had put out a call for university teams to propose CubeSat projects. And Ireland has never had a satellite project, and we had been developing a lot of new experiments and capability in satellites and satellite subsystems through David's PhD and through our own research in the group. And we decided the time was right to make this bold proposal.
So we got a group of students from UCD and we all went to ESTEC. And we came up with this pitch for this satellite idea.
Here's Alexander Kinnaird from the European Space Agency.
The Flyer Satellite Programme is the programme of the European Space Agency's Education Office, which gives university students the chance to build, test, launch and operate their own student satellite.
Where we wanted to really build up the collaboration was with the colleagues in mechanical engineering in UCD.
This is David McKeown, assistant professor in the School of Mechanical and Materials Engineering in UCD and the engineering manager of AirSat 1.
They were ready to try to build a satellite and of course to do it you need a little bit of engineering side as well. So which kind of formed into the collaboration between the School of Physics and Engineering. The satellite is so complex and so many different parts working together that, you know, you think, oh, we just throw everything together and that'll work. And then you realize, actually, we need to do a thermal analysis on that. We need to do a structural analysis on that. How are we going to deploy our antennas? How are we going to communicate? How are we going to test it? How are we going to make sure it works? So the team started small. So originally it was only a few people. And then as we realized that we needed more and more expertise, try to bring students in. So especially to start, a lot of people were students doing PhDs already, so they hadn't been doing a PhD on AirSat. And we're like, can we have a few hours of your week?
It might seem on the surface, you've got these people who are from physics, and you've got these people who are from engineering, and then maths and computer science. And so you might think, okay, it takes physicists, it takes engineers, but really everyone is coming to it with their own experiences and their own personalities. And, you know, some people are very, very good at, say, designing electronics. Some people are very, very good at designing mechanical structures. Some people are very, very good at just telling you, you said you'd do this. Why haven't you done this? We need this done now.
You get to your first point, which is your critical design review. So you have to put all the documentation together, say, this is our satellite. These are all the bits. This is what it's going to do. This is why it's going to work. And that gets reviewed by the ESA experts, and they go, okay, go and build it.
Essentially, at the CDR, you can say that AirSat exists on paper, but the CDR is really the point when all of the experts, or we have a bunch of experts here at ESA, they look at the designs and say, yes, this design is good. We think you're ready for the next stage, which is when you can start to put things together into subsystems and overall systems.
Here's Lorna Salmon, PhD student and member of the AirSat 1 team.
A lot of people ask, how do you build a satellite? And the first 2 years of this project was devoted to writing documentation, because you have to take into account lots of risks. You need to design your satellite in a way that the structure is sound, that when you run simulations on it, that you see that it will stay intact with the forces that it experiences in space. So you need to do that all theoretically first. So the first 2 years really was dedicated to writing those documents, talking to the European Space Agency experts, and working back and forth until we had a design that looked good on paper, and then we started to build.
I'm Ronan Wall, and I'm the program manager for AirSat 1. My job as program manager is to basically bring the team together. There's quite a disparate team of up to 26 very capable individuals across the university, in different disciplines and mathematics and computer science and physics and in engineering. And my job is to make sure that that team comes together and that we meet the deadlines, the milestones that are part of the project and deliver for the European Space Agency. This team is certainly not what you would expect from a bunch of students. The capability that I've seen here, based on my 17 years of experience in space industry, has really shown that they're one of the best teams that I've ever worked with. So this is not a student project per se, even though the vast majority of people on there are students. This is a highly functioning spacecraft which is being put together to the highest standards for the European Space Agency.
In September 2020, I joined Joe Thompson, PhD student and chief engineer of AirSat at UCD School of Engineering, where he was hard at work on an early version of the satellite.
A few years ago, when I was maybe 2 years into my PhD, I had no idea that I'd have an opportunity to work an actual satellite or actually build something that goes into space. CubeSat's an amazing opportunity to actually design something, build it, to experience all the different subsystems and parts of a satellite and watch them all come together. It's a big challenge because you're limited to two views of satellite, which is very small, 20 centimeters by 10 centimeters by 10 centimeters.
the team have installed a state-of-the-art cleanroom in UCD's science building to work on AirSat 1. As Jack Riley explains, the cleanroom is designed to limit airborne particles and prevent any of the satellite's components being contaminated by dust or other particles.
Every day when we're working on assembling the spacecraft or testing certain components, we have to go into the cleanroom, put on a hairnet, a beard mask, a lab coat. So all of our lab coats have metal strips running through them. A lot of the electronic components are really sensitive, and if we were to touch them and shock them, the same way, you know, you might get a shock off a door handle, we could really damage the components.
AirSat 1 will carry three experimental payloads into space. The first of these is GMOD, the satellite's gamma ray detector. I join David Murphy in the physics lab, where the wires and circuit boards of an early version of the GMOD experiment were laid out on the desk in front of him.
So this is like a prototype version of GMOD. It's much larger than the one that's going to be in AirSat 1, but it has most of the same components. So the first thing that's very important is the scintillator crystal. What we're using is a crystal called cerium bromide. What happens is that the gamma ray interacts with the crystal through photoelectric effects and other physical processes, and that generates tens of thousands of optical photons, photons that you could actually see. Then we have silicon photomultipliers. Those work to convert those optical photons into pulses of current. And then those pulses of current are processed by some very sophisticated electronics that make a record of each gamma ray photon that interacts with GMOD. And by putting together all of the information from all of the gamma ray photons that we've recorded from GMOD, we can detect gamma ray bursts.
This is Professor Sheila McBreen.
There was a lot of expertise in our group on gamma ray instrumentation and also space instruments in general. And we started that work in around 2012, seriously, with the European Space Agency, and we came up with a gamma ray detector, which was a prototype. It was really about taking what we already had and miniaturising it in order to fit into the small confines of space that you have in a CubeSat. And that can actually be quite challenging, to maintain the functionality, the electronics, make the instrument still work, but in a really small space.
We have to go to space to detect gamma ray bursts because our atmosphere actually protects us from gamma rays. Gamma ray bursts are very energetic events, which are very, very interesting for a number of reasons. They're among the most distant things that we've ever seen. The further away you go in the universe, the further back in time you're looking. So gamma ray bursts are a good way to probe the very early universe.
Two aluminium coupons, one white, one black, will sit on either end of AirSat 1. This is the satellite's second experimental payload, EMOD.
Every 90 minutes, AirSat will orbit the Earth. For half that, it'll be in sunlight. For half that, it'll be in eclipse. During the flight, then, they have temperature sensors underneath. So every time it comes into the sunlight, those coupons will heat up. The properties of the coatings will affect how that heating up and cooling down happens.
It's an entirely new technology developed by MBio. We're an Irish company, a spin-out company from UCD. And actually, not only are they coating AirSat 1 coupons, they've also coated all of Solar Orbiter, ESA's mission to the Sun, in solar black.
The third payload, wave-based control, is an experimental control system which helps to orientate the satellite in space.
That's important for lots of reasons. So you might want to point your solar panels at the Sun to generate enough power for the satellite. You might want to point your antenna back at your ground station so you can downlink your data. And the way AirSat does that is it has basically copper coils which are in the solar panels. And when you put a current through those, they create a magnetic field on the spacecraft. And then that interacts with the Earth's magnetic field, much like a compass. And that allows us to actually rotate the satellite and point it in different orientations.
Finding ways to test the wave-based control system in the lab is not without its challenges, as David McKeown explains.
You can't test it completely because we have gravity here on Earth. So we try to create as many rigs as possible with air bearings or gimbals so we can kind of try to cheat gravity and get as close to the environment in space as possible. But it's one of the tricky things because you can try it as much as you want on Earth and it can work perfectly, but you don't really know until you're orbiting the Earth.
At the bottom of the satellite is the Antennae Deployment Module, or ADM. It will play a crucial role in communication with AirSat's ground station back on Earth.
The antenna deployment module is four of these little antennas that come out, and they're all coiled up like a python, almost ready to spring out. And that allows it not to pick up radio stations, but pick up the radio signals from our ground station. And we'll send commands to it going, go into a certain mode or do a certain experiment. And then it can send back information about its payloads. So how are our experiments going? How's the health? How warm is it? How much battery we've got left? So it's our link. It's our information link with the satellite.
Two large antennae on the roofs of the ground stations will communicate with AirSat 1 as it passes over Ireland. One will be located in Dublin and another in County Kerry at the family farm of PhD student and AirSat 1 team member Bas Steinen. Maeve Doyle is working on the software that will operate AirSat 1 in space.
I work on the flight software that will run on AirSat's onboard computer. And this flight software, we develop and test it here at UCD, and it'll control all the operations that AirSat does in space. It will only pass over Ireland for about 29 to 30 minutes per day, and that'll be in orbits of about 4 to 7 minutes, and we communicate with it from that time, from when it comes over the horizon to when it goes back down over the horizon again. AirSat has to spend a lot of its time operating without having communication with the UCD ground segment. So if something happens on board, AirSat software will react automatically and will do things like push it into what's called a safe mode. And in safe mode, we turn off non-critical components of the satellite. And when it comes back around, we'll download the data and assess what went wrong and where it went wrong and try to figure out what happened. I was always interested in space. I was more interested in astronomy, so looking out into the night sky and seeing the stars. I was less concerned with satellites at the time, but now I look up into the night sky and I see a satellite passing over, and that's what I point at as well as the stars.
To meet the strict standards expected by ESA's experts, every aspect of the satellite and its subsystems is constantly tested and retested. Sarah Walsh plays an important role coordinating this aspect of the project.
I'm the assembly, integration and verification lead of the project. So basically I have to do a lot of coordinating between the assembly of the spacecraft as a whole and also the assembly of the individual subsystems or payloads experiments that we have on board. I interact with every member of the team. Every member of the team is involved with one particular subsystem, and all those subsystems have to be tested and tested. So the next stage of the project for us is quite exciting for me, because we've qualified a lot of the payloads now. Everyone has tested theirs at subsystem level, so now we tested the whole thing to make sure that they can work together, each component can talk to one another, and successfully perform its mission here on ground before we can send it up.
Between October 2021 and October 2022, members of the AirSat 1 team had to make multiple trips to the European Space Agency's testing facilities in Belgium to put the engineering and flight models of their satellite through their most challenging tests to date.
You want to make sure your satellite is going to survive both the launch and the space environment. So we try and simulate both of those things on the ground as best we can. Now with AirSat, they had two models. They had an engineering qualification model and a flight model. And that meant we could take one model and kind of put it through a very harsh campaign to ensure, okay, if that survives, the identical, the twin, the flight model should also survive. But we will also do some tests on the flight model just to make sure there isn't any differences, that the manufacturing is good, that the assembly is good, etc.
So you shake the satellite and that simulates the launch when the satellite is on the rocket and it's going into space and the whole rocket is vibrating. So you have to shake it to make sure that the thing just doesn't fall apart. And then after that, you put it into this vacuum chamber and they pump out all the air from the vacuum chamber. And then they heat it up and they cool it down and heat it up and cool it down. And that's simulating the satellite going around the Earth and coming into sunlight and going into the Earth's shadow. And then you do tests while it's in the vacuum chamber to make sure that it's functioning. And then you take it out and then you have to do all your functional tests again to make sure that it still does all the things it's supposed to be able to do after you've subjected it to that abuse.
The COVID epidemic had come to Ireland in the spring of 2020. And for a project which by its nature is hands-on and collaborative, it presented the AirSat 1 mission with a difficult set of challenges to overcome. It also had a deep personal impact on members of the team and their families, none more so than David Murphy.
We built a spacecraft, right? Like that's, you know, that's a hands-on thing, you know, where you physically put together a spacecraft. But I suppose the thing you don't always appreciate, and we didn't appreciate going into this, is that you don't just build the spacecraft. You build, first of all, you build
loads of prototypes. And then you have to build the things that help you build the prototypes, and you build the tools. So actually, it's a lot of hands-on work. And when you're not allowed into your lab, you're told to work from home, that becomes really, really difficult. We had very recently lost my dad, who passed away after a pretty short battle with lung cancer. So, yeah, he was taken away from us, you know, in a very short space of time. I think he was very, very happy for me that I was doing something that I really, really liked, and he was very, very supportive for that. And then, of course, after he passed away, just nonstop, all I got was all of his best friends coming to me and like, your dad was so proud of you, you know that. So, yeah.
It was also during the COVID period, the team decided that the first Irish satellite in space should carry something special on board, which would make it truly unique. They enlisted the help of UCD School of English, as well as Irish poets, libraries and schools, to reach out to students from across Ireland. They asked them to create poetry which would eventually be etched on the casing of AirSat-1's flight model.
Finding students and letting them write poems about what AirSat meant to them or what space meant to them, and work with them and build this up. And then that was curated into one poem. So lines and ideas from different poems were brought together by Paul Perry in the School of English here. Yeah, so that's going to space, which is kind of a cool thing for 15, 16-year-old person to have a line of their poem going up there. And it's nice to have just a little bit of poetry at the end of our satellite forever there. So the poem is kind of etched into spiral. I think it's like an octopus or something coming out, or maybe an explosion of a star. You have all these lines kind of spiraling into the center, and it's quite a beautiful thing. Emer Boyle, our artist in residence here in UCD, she worked on the artwork for that. So it's quite a beautiful looking bottom of a satellite, definitely the most beautiful satellite there is.
I do think it's a great inspiration for many of us, and for, in particular, younger people. And we've been really at pains to make that part of our mission, to inspire others, and not just into STEM, but to curiosity and wonder about the universe we're in and how fragile our place in that world is and in that universe.
There was this day that we had in Mali, the Museum of Literature Ireland, where all of the people who had worked on the poem were in a room together for the first time. This process of composing the poem and putting it together and getting it etched on the spacecraft, that all happened without any of these people really having met in real life. And then when everyone got together and we showed the video of the etching and people stood up, you know, to talk about their experiences, that was a very emotional day as well.
A lone pilot searching for home amid starry frescoes and little blood waves that mimic the tide pull. Our insignificance, our planet a crumb on the fabric of space-time.
Sharing the same sky, you and I, wherever feet are anchored. I will write your name on the moon with my fingertips, an apparition cast from memory's design. Universe whisper, orange as goldfish. All I want is the delicious scent, the dark blue muddy shoes and ruined grass of starlight. Home. Strawberry moon in the cloudless blue-black mystique. One day it could all be rain. Those wind-swept words, voices clutched to our warmth, courage plucked from conversation.
You're listening to AirSat-1, Ireland's first satellite, on documentary and drama on News Talk. You're listening to documentary and drama on News Talk. This is AirSat-1, Ireland's first satellite.
By November 2022, most of AirSat-1's assembly and integration had been completed, and the team were preparing for some major mission milestones ahead, including the flight readiness review at the European Space Agency. All going well, they would finally be given their clearance to fly. 5 years in, by now almost 50 students had worked on some aspect of the project, while a core team of about 20 students had been working on it since its earliest days. AirSat 1 had gone beyond anyone's expectations as an educational tool for the staff and students of UCD. For Krishna Reddy at Kapuru, one of the most important lessons they learned was how to work together as a team.
AirSat team is a dream team. All of the members are really helpful. If you have a problem, it's the only thing that you need is just to send an email and everybody are ready to help you.
Willie O'Connor is Associate Professor in the School of Mechanical and Materials Engineering at UCD.
One of the things I love about the project is the fact that we have students from many different disciplines, all very bright and able, but from different backgrounds, different characters. But we're all in this together. And once a week we come together to see how each of us is getting on, discuss problems. We share documents, share files, so people can see what other people are doing. In an atmosphere like that, where everybody's interdependent and we're under a certain amount of pressure, you could easily have tensions, but there are none. People are smiling, they're relaxed. I love that. It's a joy to be part of it.
This is Alexander Kinnaird from the European Space Agency.
Diversity brings strength. The more diverse your teams are in terms of gender, maybe socioeconomic background, academic background, the more kind of viewpoints you have. And we see it with AirSat, actually. They're really friends. They like each other and they hang around together and they're not just focused on working in the lab together. And I think that's partly due to the diversity in the team.
Education has always been a key focus of the AirSat 1 mission. And Lorraine O'Hanlon tells me how AirSat 1 has sparked the curiosity and imagination of young people from across Ireland.
All you're doing is pushing an open door when you talk to young people about space. It amazes young people that Irish students are doing this and that this satellite is being built in this building. So we have a lot of visiting groups, transition year students. A lot of the team go give talks all around the country for schools and libraries and so on. And then to say, well, we have students who get jobs as spacecraft operators, as payload specialists, and they're all Irish people working all over the world in these really exciting careers, and then coming back here and working in Ireland.
Since December 2020, UCD has had its own space centre, C-Space, for space-related research, innovation and education. It provides something of a hub for the growing Irish space sector.
The Irish space sector is growing globally. It's growing. It's an enormous business because it offers you a global view for looking at the Earth, for Earth observation, for monitoring climate variables, for monitoring agricultural practice, predicting drought. All of these things you can do from space, and increasingly you can do with smaller and smaller satellites. So I think it is a hugely growing sector and has amazing opportunities for us, for our companies and for our students. We also are relying on government support, because you don't just get a frequency and start talking to a satellite. That has to go through a whole communication regulation process. Nobody had ever done that for a satellite before. We need to understand, you know, how to insure the satellite, who's liable for the satellite. We have to be compliant with UN requirements.
One of the final tests the team had to complete was mission testing. Would AirSat 1 in the lab, but switched on as if it was in orbit, the students who would be communicating with and operating AirSat 1 were presented with potential scenarios it might encounter while it was in space.
Then we start putting spanners into works and thinking of scenarios when things might go wrong. So we'll inject errors intentionally into the satellite. So we'll say that the satellite's coming back saying it's spinning, and then the operators need to figure out, is it really spinning or is the sensor faulty and it's telling us we're spinning? And they have to go through the right procedures to figure out what the real issues are there. And then when that's figured out, what actions we take to try to solve that.
The final stage the satellite needed to pass was the flight acceptance review. A panel of experts from ESA would review every aspect of AirSat 1 and decide whether or not to give them their ticket to fly. I caught up with Ronan Wall for an update at UCD in November 2022.
We've actually had a conditional pass for our flight acceptance review. So yes, you've got a ticket to orbit, a real sort of Willy Wonka golden ticket type moment. We've got this ticket to orbit with some terms and conditions applying that we've got some actions to close out. Come up to Christmas now, and soon after that, probably the mid to the end of January 2023, we'll be packaging up the spacecraft.
It's going to launch from French Guiana, so near the equator. So go up in a European rocket called Vega C. So the satellite itself goes in a box, a deployer, we call it. So the satellite goes into basically like a jack-in-the-box, a box with a spring at the end of it that will eventually push it out into space. So it's going to the Czech Republic to be put into that box, and then from the Czech Republic it goes to French Guiana.
Getting very, very excited about the launch. We're hoping to hand over AirSat 1 to the European Space Agency very, very soon. And then it's just a waiting game until our satellite is in space.
I haven't really thought about the launch. I'm nervous about, jinxing it too early. When we deliver the satellite to ESA, then I will let myself probably think about actually launching.
AirSat 1 would be launched on board a Vega C, which, all going well, would be the third launch of this type of rocket. But first, they had another launch to look forward to, as the second Vega C was due to take off from French Guiana on December 20th, just in time for the Christmas holidays.
So we had been out for our Christmas evening out on the 19th of December, and we had some conversations about who was going to stay up till 1:30 a.m. to watch it. You know, everyone was in very high spirits. We had basically passed flight acceptance. We were delivering the spacecraft in January. You know, we were go for launch. But I couldn't sleep. Anyway, I woke up at about 4 and I came down. I said, okay, well, I'll just watch the video now of the launch.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, top. Allumage P120, décollage.
How fantastic to see Vega C roaring across that equatorial sky. Yet again, one can't take one's eyes off it. It's so impressive, like a boil of light rumbling across the jungle.
La propulsion est nominale, le pilotage est calme.
We see that there's a problem with the trajectory. David, can you tell us?
Yes. So there seems to be an issue with the launcher, yes. So.
I looked at my phone and there were all these messages from the team of shock and dismay. And I just couldn't believe it. I could not believe that it failed.
So it had an issue with its second stage, which didn't produce enough thrust and wasn't able to get into orbit. So essentially, yeah, that was the end of our opportunity to be on that rocket, and we had to go looking for a new rocket.
It is a very strange feeling. I still don't am fully dug down into it, but it is a very strange mixture of relief and disappointment. Huge dismay that it had happened and clear implications for us, and huge relief that we weren't on it. So it's a kind of very strange feeling, and you're feeling awful for the teams affected by that. I can imagine those people must be devastated to have many years' work just gone in a blink of an eye. There's several inquiries going on, and so we have to just let them run their course and do the analysis into what went wrong. So we won't know for a while, I suspect, and then we'll understand what the implications are, whether it's a couple of months or even potentially much longer.
We kind of got rid of our uncertainty and now it's all back again, which is it's depressing to the team who want to see it in space now. You know, we've been working a long time, we were ready, and it's out of our control completely. We don't design the rockets, we design the satellite, you know. So yeah, we were waiting for the bus to come along, and the previous bus broke down, so they cancelled all the buses.
We were just worried that we were going to start losing our team, that we had all these people who had really great experience, and we wanted to have those people in mission control, you know, for the launch and for the operations. We didn't want them to have moved on to, you know, careers in industry or what have you.
We booked a slot for AirSat on a Vega, and then there was a mission anomaly with one of the Vegas. There was some rescheduling, remanifesting. Basically, the music started playing and everyone had to find a chair again. And AirSat did not get a chair on the next Vega flight. But the satellite was ready, and we really wanted to have them launched. And we wanted to have them launched for UCD and for Ireland, so we went external from European launches.
The AirSat launch was back on, this time from the SpaceX launch facility in California. 6 months later, the team were once again carefully packing up AirSat 1 for integration with a rocket, SpaceX's Falcon 9.
We packed it up in UCD. We did some last-minute functional tests to make sure that the trip from Dublin to the Netherlands hadn't done any damage to it. Then we did some last-minute configuration, basically configuring it for what we call a first boot. We're saying to it, the next time you turn on, you're going to be in space. Here's the things you need to do. We packed it up, we slid it into the dispenser, and then there's a little door on the top of the dispenser that you close. And that was the last time we saw AirSat 1.
Early on the morning of December 1st, 2023, I joined some of the AirSat 1 crew on a small dusty road near the Vandenberg Space Force Base in California.
We're getting very close to launch now, and I'm here with the AirSat crew. A number of the team haven't slept very well last night, because from yesterday evening on, that building sense of excitement has been steadily growing. The sky is clear and blue. It's a beautiful sunny morning here in California. We can see the moon high up in the sky above us. There's a kind of an arid countryside with a green belt of trees and a ridge touching that blue skyline. And from beyond that ridge, the rocket, very soon after launch, will appear. There's a real sense of buzz and excitement around. Like, there's so many cars and more coming all the time as people get as close as they possibly can. Lots of local enthusiasts, bloggers, social media influencers, and there's even a news crew from Korea, because we believe there might be a Korean satellite due to be launched on the rocket as well. So there's a real buzz around the place, and I've talked to some of the locals to get a sense of what they hope to see.
Quite a show. Something you'll always remember. A lot of noise. You know, you'll see it first, and then the sound will hit you, and then you'll be able to watch the booster when it comes back. You'll be able to see the entry burn, and you'll be able to see it with your naked eye all the way down to landing, and then the sonic boom, of course, right about the time it touches down.
People are pacing around, looking over the ridge as we get closer and closer to the launch time.
It's like you have, I don't know, you've had too many sweets and your tummy's turning over a little bit, and you're going, what's going on here? Because what it represents is a key point in a 6-year journey. It's more than that as well. It's like it's the hopes and dreams and goals that a lot of us have had since we were small to be part of space. Here we're standing here just like minutes away from launch.
Yeah, the conditions are absolutely fabulous, so I'm expecting to see magic here.
No, I'm feeling great. It's a really lovely vibe. It feels like a music festival or something, or the Pope's Mass. I had to be here. A full circle moment. Yeah, I couldn't miss it, for sure.
Just to see it off in the distance, this huge rocket, and to think that AirSat 1 is packed inside it. It's up at the top of that rocket is, you know, this little box that we've put so much effort into over the past 6 years. My two sisters, my mom, my family came with me. My niece and my nephews are here. They had to take some time off school, but look, if this doesn't inspire them to go do something in science, I don't know what will.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, ignition. Go Korea 425, go SpaceX.
Look at it, look! Here it
Hey.
Hey!
Was that cool?
It's in space now!
Hey!
Hey! That was another sign for our eyes! We did it!
Oh, yeah, that's so well! It's sliding!
There you go.
Yeah.
Wow. It's almost overwhelming. It was just really beautiful kind of going up. It comes over the hill and it was just gracefully flying through the sky, smooth as anything. Yeah, kind of just goes out of sight. And then the second booster comes, when it comes back, and there's a sonic boom, and it's just an amazing thing.
Yeah, it's like every emotion all at once. All the hard work that's gone in to get to this point, like all the energy you put in, it just all comes out all at once, and it's very, very emotional. Nothing can prepare you for the launch that has your own satellite on it. Like, you're so invested in how this thing is going. Yeah, the floodgates just opened.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible.
The sense, you know, you're a team and you're friends and you've been on this journey together.
Everyone just responded as one, kind of. Everyone was feeling the exact same thing. And we all understood how everyone felt, you know.
Your mum was very emotional. I could see she came over straight away and gave you a massive hug.
Yeah, my dad passed away 2 years ago. He was a huge supporter of this. He wanted to see it fly before he passed. Unfortunately, he didn't get that opportunity. But yeah, you can imagine how that makes us all feel that today we've done it.
Yeah.
We got there.
Oh, that's amazing. Well done.
Thank you. It's
such an achievement.
I think nearly everyone on the team cried a little bit. I think it's just so surreal. And yeah, we've been waiting for this for 6 years, and it's just, oh, it's mind-blowing. It's even mind-blowing to be able to watch it and know that something that you've built is just on its way up into space. It's just...
absolute elation. Unbelievable feeling. We've been working on this for 6 years, and to see it actually take off and go into space is just unbelievable.
You've had a grin on your face ever since.
Yeah, and tears in my eyes. This is a dream of mine since I've been a kid, since I knew about space. Just incredible.
And you've done it.
Yeah, and to do it with these people here as well, just amazing, the whole experience. Looking forward now to hearing the first signal from it.
The first thing you'll hear will be a beacon, and that's an automated, continuously transmitted signal that just doesn't stop. And it says it gives things like the spacecraft health, like battery temperature, battery voltage, and also the call sign for AirSat-1. So we know it's AirSat. It's very possible that the first information that we get that AirSat is alive won't come from the Dublin ground station at all. It'll come from radio amateurs somewhere else in the world, just because of the orbit and when the antennas get deployed.
Soon after launch, the team in California set up their own communication center, in constant contact with Camón McKenna, Gabriel Finneran, and other members of the mission control team back in Ireland. The next phase was also one of the most nerve-wracking for the entire team: acquisition of AirSat-1's first signal. Then, a little over 2 hours after launch, AirSat-1 was deployed from the rocket and propelled into its first orbit around the Earth. The team in Dublin, as well as amateur radio enthusiasts from around the world, began to search for its first signal. Finally, at 9:05 p.m, the AirSat team heard the news they'd been waiting for.
Are you okay for me to say yes, the AirSat is alive and confirmed? And
AirSat's alive, yeah.
That's it.
Yes!
You know, we hoped, of course, we would get to this day, but it has been a long and winding road. And yeah, so it's just unbelievable. And to have such a perfect launch like we did, and for us to have heard from the satellite already, it's just fantastic. On the spacecraft, the poem is on the outside, but on the inside, we have 278 people's names etched on the spacecraft. And they were the people who we wanted to thank for their support and their help, and to have had so much wonderful support at home to the team all along the way, but particularly over the last few days and week. It's just impossible to kind of absorb it all and really process it. But my heart is full.
Having a team that is harmonious is actually a really hard thing to do for 6 years, and to do across so many students and across different disciplines. And I really feel like we nailed that. The team has just been amazing. I mean, amazing technically, but amazing just people genuinely who have kind of worked for each other.
for the last 6 years, we've been able to go to bed safe in the knowledge that AirSat is, you know, in our lab. Nothing's going to happen to AirSat. Now AirSat's in space, and it's coming over Dublin every 12 hours, whether you like it or not. It's coming over Dublin every 12 hours, and someone has to be there to command it and to get the data from it. So it's a whole different sort of phase of the project that we've gone into now. So I think we're all very, very tired. We need to get some rest. We need to do some celebrating. But yeah, then the real hard work begins, that we've got a satellite in space and we need to operate it.
Breeze breath, feel the blush dust my cheeks, the stars like old photos. Leave the porch light on, the children dance, their mothers sing. Everything changes all at once, the sky, the sun. Bound with images of mystery, like lemongrass and sleep, except for the tree. I look up. I see stars. They live forever inside me. Home is the wild bitterness of backyard blackberries. A bay tree, its fragrant leaves, breathing easy. A smell so familiar, it has none.
AirSat 1, Ireland's first satellite, is edited, produced and presented by John Higgins of As the Crow Flies Productions, with sound mixing by Neil Kavanagh of Coach House Media. With special thanks to University College Dublin and the European Space Agency. Funded by Commissioner Naman with the television licence fee. For more, see newstalk.com.